Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hi, thanks so much for tuning into the Shame Free Zone. If you're following me on Twitter, I just sent you a couple of communiques to let you know that I am going live right now with a really special guest. Her name is Barbara Karellis. You might have heard of her. She's got quite the list of credentials here. She's an author, a sex educator, a university lecturer, a workshop facilitator, a motivational speaker, and a theater artist. She's got a couple of books out. The most recent ones are Urban Tantra, The Sacred Sex for 21st Century, and another book called Luxurious Loving, Tantric Inspirations for Passion and Pleasure. Barbara's pioneering Urban Tantra workshops were named Best in New York City by Time Out New York Magazine. She's also the co-founder of Erotic Awakening, which is a groundbreaking series of workshops which toured the United States and Australia. And Barbara is currently offering inspiring and life-changing workshops, lectures, keynotes on a variety of topics to conferences, businesses, schools, and individuals. And you can also hear her monthly on Hay House Radio's I Can Do It Hour, where as Hay House's official sex expert, she answers callers' questions about love, sex, spirituality, and healing. And she's got a fabulous topic for us tonight. She wants to talk to you about starting a revolution, and specifically how to start your own personal sexual revolution. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It is such a pleasure. I've been wanting a whole hour to talk with you for ages, and this is how we could manage to do it.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Life in the 21st century, not
yeah,
even
I see your beautiful smiling face on Facebook. And,
and there we are, finally.
So, hi, Barbara. I'm in a hurry. I know you are, too.
Exactly. So, yes. Yes.
You've got a couple of websites, actually, and you've got one about Two Tall Blondes.
Two Tall Blondes is the website that I had for many years with my partner, Kate Bornstein, the author, performance artist, and gender revolutionary. And we're phasing out...
You're still together.
Yeah, we're still together, but we're phasing out the website because she's not blonde anymore.
Well, you know what?
Actually,
neither am I.
See, I didn't know that either.
Something in the air.
I'm blonde and pink, but you can go to my website and see that.
When did Kate change her hair color?
Actually, you know, a couple of years ago, but, you know, when we did that website, it was, that's over 10 years ago. And the web is a very different place now, and Kate has a blog, and I've got my own site. So Two Tall Blondes is phasing out. Kate is has a blog, Hello Cruel World, and I've got urbantantra.org as in orgasm and barbaracarellis.com. So we're all using the web in ways that we never even, you know, dreamed would exist years ago. I can't believe the amount of hookups people do on Twitter or, the advice they give each other on Facebook. You know,
and you've
got to
get
no
video out there. I mean, I realize now all of the websites have got an introductory video now on page one. Well, not all of them, but all the ones that are really cool. And I don't have that yet, so I'm like going, oh, no, I have to get video.
I'm not as fond of video on page one, only because it if somebody's in a hurry, they don't have time to watch video. So
no,
I don't like long flash lead-in, so I keep my videos, you know, inside the site. If people have time, great, but if you're just there to get a piece of information or you want to contact me, you know how to do it. It may be old-fashioned of me, but I'm a fan of clean, effective sites. It came from all my years of show business advertising.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole nother story. Let's talk about a revolution.
Sorry, but anyway, I just wanted to make sure our listeners know who Kate is. She's a gender icon. I mean,
yes, she is.
Name the can you just
a gender outlaw. My gender workbook. Hello, cruel world. 101 alternatives to suicide for teens, freaks, and other outlaws. That's her most recent book, and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
She is also working right now on a memoir, which will be out next year sometime. I don't have the actual publication date, but that memoir is going to be quite something. It may be her biggest book yet.
She's actually saved a lot of lives. She's one of the first person to really come forward about gender in a way that was so revolutionary.
Speaking of revolution, yes, she was certainly one of the leaders of the sex and gender revolution.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, listeners, if you, I always thought it was Kate Bornstein, but it's Bornstein.
It doesn't matter. She doesn't care. So you're right, too. She doesn't care.
All right. So anyway, I'm glad to hear you guys are still together and happy, and that's always a nice way to start the new year.
It is.
But tell the listeners a little bit about what it is that you mean when you talk about having a personal sexual revolution. What would that look like? Would you just become like an Uber slut?
Well, I think it would look very, very different for each different person, and I think that's the point. I come at this from a couple of directions. When I was writing my book, Urban Tantra, one of the reasons I wanted to write it was that there was no Tantra book, no sex and spirituality book in any mainstream way that included any sort of alternative sexuality. There was nothing for queer people. There was nothing for people who were into BDSM. There was nothing for people who were into open relationships. Tantra had become reduced to, neo-American Tantra anyway, had become kind of reduced to, in the public mind, white, heterosexual, middle-aged, Marin County, woo-woo, workshop freaks.
Right.
And I really wanted a Tantra practice that would be available for everybody else. Because everybody was playing with sex and energy, but they didn't have sort of a text that I didn't want it just to be for queer people, because that marginalizes people. And I think I've had enough marginalization in the world. When I say a sexual revolution, I want everybody to, in fact, commit to their own personal sexual evolution.
Oh.
And...
yes.
Yeah, and if everybody goes inside and goes, what's next for me? Where have I been? What do I really want? What are my needs? What are my values? What are then my desires and preferences? And I think everybody can custom design their own personal evolution revolution. And when everybody is free to commit to that kind of growth, people start to come together. A real good example of that is an event that occurs in Washington, D.C. in the winter and in Northern Maryland in the late summer is Dark Odyssey. World Wide Web, darkodyssey.com. It's coming up on the weekend of February 14th in D.C., if any listeners are interested. And it's a coming together of a whole collection of conscious sexualities. Queer, BDSM, open relationships, swinging, pagan, transgender, whatever anybody's into sexually can be accommodated, respected, and appreciated at Dark Odyssey. The only rule is you have to be conscious about what you do. You can't be sloppy with bad boundaries and be rude and be unfeeling and unthinking. You kind of have to have your shit together. That's really the only rule. Respect and have your shit reasonably together. And that, in the years that Dark Odyssey has existed, I have used that kind of as a model for a new sexual revolution, which is to say that We all can get together. We can be safe to be our own kind of sexual in each other's presence without being hurt, ridiculed, or judged. And beyond that, we actually can learn from each other and take the best of what somebody else is doing and take a little bit of that and incorporate the parts we like and include it in our sexy spiritual path. And we can do that without fear of being called cultural appropriationists or whatever academic term they're throwing on borrowing these days. And we can just feel free to go, oh, I like that. Would you teach me how to do that? Just that little bit right there, that thing you were doing. Can you show me? And no one's going to turn around and go get lost, you know, if the request is
Let me see if I'm getting a read on what you're suggesting here. By the way, I popped over to the Dark Odyssey website. What a gorgeous photo they've got there on page one. So I'm going to make sure that the folks on Twitter have got access to that. But it sounds to me like, you know, some of the things I've noticed, we've got Tantra over in the like you said, you know, middle-class white communities. And then a lot of times, you know, BDSM seems like it's got its own, you know, kind of a demographic, and these groups don't associate with each other. And
exactly.
You're kind of talking about approaching all the different variations and philosophies and practices kind of like a banquet that you should be able to just, you know, as you're going, you know, down, you could pick a little of this and a little of that, and nobody's going to make you sign up and join.
Mm-hmm. I think we all have to really take a step backwards and realize just how powerfully organized the religious right wing has been for the last 15 years. And as they have randomly attacked one sexual minority after another, and there actually is for anybody who's really interested in this semi-seriously or seriously, there's a wonderful book called Sex in Crisis just out by Dagmar Herzog that explores this theme. But in the past 15 years, each one of the demographics that you just described have been fighting so hard just for their own little small sets of rights, the right to existence, the right not to be jailed, that nobody has thought to just get together and realize that all of these sexual minorities and gender minorities, this is one of Kate's big things too, we have no clout because we have no cohesion. We have not joined together and realized we're all on the same side. We're all sex positivists. And so the anti-sex people are winning. Because we're so separated.
Well, it has been. I'm not so sure about this year. I think we may see a turning of the tide.
And
I sure hope so.
That's why we're talking about this today when you and I agreed on this topic. It's not that I think Barack Obama is and his new administration are all sex positives and they're just going to, you know, say, hey, whatever you want to do, come over to the White House. We have a big room. They're not going to do that. You know?
No, it's actually worse than that because this whole trafficking thing right now is such a big deal.
Right.
And everybody, the way that it has been sold and crammed down people's throats is kind of like, well, it'd be like saying you're soft on crime.
Right.
And of course, as many of us know, you know, the whole just saying, you know, war on drugs has just put a bunch of people who needed to go to rehab or AA meetings, put them behind bars.
That's right.
So now we have, you know, a great prison industrial complex and
overcrowding.
And we haven't solved anything. But it's really hard to get a politician to stand up and say, you know, no, I don't want to put people in jail for using drugs. Let's find some better solutions to this. By the same token, this trafficking thing has really taken root, and Barack Obama is totally in that camp. So I voted for him. I even, you know, worked on his campaign just a little bit, volunteered some of my time, and, you know, and I'm really thrilled that he's in office, and yet I
Me
know
too.
That politically, we're going to be at odds on this thing about trafficking and sex worker rights.
The one thing that we may have going for us going forward, though, is a little less direct persecution and therefore prosecution of the right to be sexual. There may be a bit more open space for us to, as I said, nobody's going to hand us back our sexual rights. We are going to have to take them. But we may be, the focus may be a little less on sexual alternatives than it was when with the previous administration and the rabid obsession.
Oh, if nothing else, you know, sexual freedom oftentimes is tied to reproductive rights. And,
yes.
And I'm positive that a Democratic administration is going to be 100% for, reproductive
yes.
rights. Which means that we will be able to hopefully at least turn around teen pregnancy. Since Bush got into office, there is a much higher incidence of teen pregnancy, a much higher incidence
Indeed.
Of sexually transmitted infections
yes.
with our teens. I mean, that's what the religious right gave us. They gave us a whole bunch of STDs and unwanted babies.
Because they would not discuss condoms.
No. Whenever they discuss condoms, they actually try to convince the kids that they don't work, so the kids are like,
yes,
well,
exactly. So we now have, when you and I go to college campuses, the people we are talking to grew up under this cloud, under this umbrella of misinformation, lies, distortion, fear. The fact that these kids come to my workshops and are as open and as willing as they are is remarkable given what they were fed during their entire growing up. So they, I go out in the world and do much of the work I do these days for that age group. Because they know it's nonsense, but they have no idea how to change or how to step out of it because they have absolutely no tools. It's where I think though the next revolution is coming from, but they need some tools or they're going to make mistakes that those of us in the boomer generation already made, and if we could get to them and say, hey, there's a few things you might want to know before you try this. Let me just give you a little list here, a pamphlet of avoid this and start there, okay?
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's just really strange where the conservatives took us because conservative administrations do seem to proliferate a lot of porn.
Ooh, yeah.
So we got tons and tons of porn. Porn becomes kind of like the little dirty secret that you do when nobody's watching sort of
mm-hmm.
thing. But I was
mm-hmm.
recently just speaking at Sonoma State, and they had done a survey of their own classroom, and like 50% of all the female students look at online porn on a regular basis.
50%, huh? Wow.
That's a huge shift. I mean, I remember in the 90s when I was trying to sell woman-produced, woman-centric porn through the pages of On Our Backs, which was a lesbian-produced magazine, for women, by women. It was all about
great
women.
Magazine.
But
great
the only
magazine.
You know what? 80% of the subscribers to that magazine were men.
No, really?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I
that doesn't surprise me, but I didn't realize that.
I couldn't sell. So On Our Backs couldn't sell to women, and I couldn't sell my video to women. It was just ridiculous.
And now 50% of the watchers.
Now 50% of the young women in their 20s are consuming porn. So,
that's a great thing in terms of what bothers me about it is because, as you said, the great proliferation of porn is largely fueled by what you repress expresses. So
yes.
A lot of the porn that has been made, in the 90s there was a lot of feminist porn, and it may not have been widely distributed, but it was good stuff. Annie Sprinkle stuff, a lot of people were doing really good stuff, Candida.
Oh yeah, Fanny Fatale.
But recently, a lot of the porn that's out there, the really extreme gonzo stuff, is
yeah.
not necessarily what I want young women seeing. I'm the First Amendment person to my death. So don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating that censorship. But I wish they were seeing the stuff that we made 15 years ago when feminist porn really was wonderful stuff.
And that is actually a trend that I'm sure you see this too. When I speak to the young girls in the colleges, they're very open about sex as far as being able to look at explicit material and talk about it explicitly, and yet not connected to their own bodies.
Right. Right.
So it's like sex is a visual experience. It's out there somewhere. It's a spectator sport, but it doesn't become a personal thing where they're actually living it. And if they do engage in it, a lot of times it's like they're just kind of like trying to act out the porn script.
There's a lot of dissociation, and that's what comes from not having any sort of sexual education, especially embodied sexual education practice, when in schools, there's just no, even those of us who sat through the giggly bad health classes, there was at least, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, not so much 80s, but there was at least some stab at it. There was some discussion about sex that didn't begin and end with "don't do it."
Right.
So there was obviously the internet wasn't there. There were video games weren't there. There was less living visually on a screen than there is now. So now obviously sex has gone there too. Where video games are the war toys for boys, porn is the sex and romance for girls. We need to do a little embodiment work here.
Well, we really do, because, I mean, people are just really approaching sex from a mechanical standpoint. And that's where, things like Urban Tantra come in and get people to breathe into their bodies.
That's actually, that's what I do on college campuses? I host workshops called How to Have a Gender-Free Orgasm. Doesn't that sound academic? And with that title, I can bring my breath and energy orgasm workshop to campuses.
Do you actually teach them how to breathe?
Yeah.
Fully clothed, I'm assuming.
Fully clothed, absolutely, and no one touches anybody. Absolutely.
And nobody touches anybody. Wow.
And it's part yoga, part breathing, and the other thing we do is we deconstruct sex. We take sex apart, and I say, everybody, you're going to leave your genitals at the door. You can pick them up again on your way out. But this is not a workshop about genitals whatsoever. We can do that kind of workshop, but not here tonight. We're going to deconstruct all the other parts of what makes sex besides genitals. And you'd be amazed how much there is. And then
awesome.
You start.
Awesome. Hold on a second. I'm going to check in with our listeners. I've got a hot question for you about that.
Cool.
Listeners, you can call in and talk to Barbara right now. Barbara Corrales, famous author of Urban Tantra and also the Urban Tantra Workshops, which were voted Best of New York. Call us toll-free at 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And so can you tell us a little bit, Barbara, about this great genital-free sex workshop that you're teaching in colleges? What do
sure.
they do?
Well, they realize that energy follows thought, that you can actually move energy around your body using your mind. Real simple stuff like put all your thought, attention, and energy into the little finger on your right hand. And they do it, and their finger starts tingling, and they go, ooh, ooh. And then you say, okay, imagine if you could do that. You can imagine that you might be able to do that with genitals, too. And we just get the idea going that energy follows thought, a basic Eastern sexual concept, that in Tantra, I tell them, we sex is not an action. Sex is rather an energy we allow. So we talking about sex as an energy instead of a something on your to-do list.
Right.
And then we break it down to how to move that sexual energy around. Movement. Squeezes of the PC muscle, or Kegels as they're commonly known, making sounds. Now in Tantra, there's every chakra, every energy center in the body has a different tone, and depending on what tradition you belong to, there's various ohms or lums or vums or symbols, Sanskrit, you know, syllables that you sing at various pitches. Na 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 na. In my workshop, this is something I got from my beloved Annie Sprinkle. We do a different kind of chakra chant. I ask the kids to pretend that they're dubbing a porn movie, that they're doing all the sounds for an orgy scene. But the orgy is only happening in their mind, and they have to close their eyes. And then we all together dub the orgy scene in our mind's eye. And then after about 30 seconds, they realize that just for making sex sounds, they're as high as a kite. And they're giggling and they feel great and blood's rushing into their cheeks and, you know. And then we put all the bits and pieces together. The breath, the sound, the thought. And we lie down, the kegels, and we lie down on the floor, everybody completely away from everybody else, turn the lights down.
You're getting dangerously close to fire breath orgasm territory.
That's it, and that's what we do.
No. Do they actually?
My largest crowd was 125 kids doing the fire breath.
Did they have fire breath orgasms?
Yes, all the time.
Oh my God. Oh my God. How long does the workshop go for?
It's about 2 hours.
A 2 hour
and
workshop.
Because we have to leave them time a little bit more if you count chill out time. What happens at the end of that, especially to people of this age, who are, you know, bright thinking young adults, that it completely takes the roof off their, what I say is that it totally opens their totality of possibilities. It's like somebody rips a hole in the sky and there's a whole universe out there.
Oh yeah. I remember Jawala.
Right. Jawala was my first tantra teacher.
Well, mine too. And I was just about ready to walk out of the fire breath orgasm class because I thought it sounded like a bunch of hooey. And I thought all these women were having orgasms because they were just like, it was a power suggestion. So I was looking around but I was still doing the PC exercises and the breathing and everything like I was supposed to, but I was kind of looking around for my coat and my purse and the door. I was getting ready to go out, and then all of a sudden, you know, literally, the top of my head blew off, and it was like seeing the face of God or something. I mean, you know, or making love to the universe. It was,
yes.
And it was earth-shaking and a little bit frightening.
Yeah, and that's
kind of aftercare do you do?
We go into non-speaking, non-analysis. People can speak if they have a feeling or a question that's body-related, a care-related question. I always set it up so that, let's say there's a sex-positive group on campus, for example.
Right.
Sometime in 2 or 3 days, people get to go to that group and have a talk section about, was that an orgy? Was that not an orgy? There were people in the room, but we weren't really having sex. For those people who need to process it intellectually, which is great. And also to just share experiences. And I stick around as long as is necessary. I have had people completely change their life plan after that. And some of those people I'm still in touch with because I figure I was the facilitator of that process, so I volunteer to talk to those people who need a little extra support after stuff. But one of the things I do is remind them that nothing is revealed in a process like this that you can't handle. There is, you know, and everybody can do this. If you didn't feel much, your body's safety mechanisms are in place. It'll just take a little longer. Go home and practice it alone. One of the big beliefs that we have in this, that we get taught in this society, handed down from our parents, is you can't be sexual in public. So some people don't feel the effects right away because they just can't go there because there's programming that just is not going to be overturned in one darned workshop.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no.
But I've seen humongous. That's what I love about college age people right now is they are so primed to do sex well.
Are all the colleges signing up for this workshop?
A number of them are. This year I was making a list. This year I've been at Wesleyan, St. Mary's, Maryland. well.
Oh, it's back in 2009 or 2008.
Just this past semester. I've also done Columbia, Barnard, NYU, Vassar, Yale. I've done those two.
Oh, well, I'm headed to Yale next month. I've never been there before.
Oh, for the sex week?
Yes, I'm going to be on a panel about decriminalizing prostitution.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, yeah. Yeah, sex week at Yale. I'm not going this year, but it's a wonderful thing. That's fabulous. That's fabulous.
I'm excited because I've never been to Yale before. But so it's basically
I like Yale. You'll like Yale.
It's blue states then that are signing up for you haven't.
I haven't pretty much. It's certainly a lot of New England and Northeast. I have done it though. I did Texas. Texas did do one in Texas.
You did not.
Southeastern University in Texas, a private.
You've got to
school.
Be kidding me.
Texas,
really?
I've done Texas. I've done Oregon.
You taught fire breath orgasm in the
we
same
don't
state.
Call it that. It's a gender-free orgasm. It's all marketing, darling.
Okay. Gender-free orgasm.
But it's true because one of the things I'm trying to show them is that they are, especially the whole male-female thing, these kids have all grown up thinking that the other gender, I know there are more than two, but for the purposes of this conversation, that the other gender is like poison, is like dangerous, is like something to be afraid of.
Right.
So it's very deliberate on my part to eliminate these gender differences.
Wow.
Because, you know, it gets them and all of us in such trouble. That men are from Mars, women are from Venus thing is one of the greatest disservices of the 90s did to us. I mean, whereas it's, I have done, especially around sex, now around communication and the way brains are wired, there may be a little something to it, sure. But it got carried over into sex into such a way that people don't even think they have no way of relating to each other consciously. They have no way in. So one of the things that is part of my personal sexual revolution is teaching people how to negotiate, how to have boundaries, permeable boundaries, you know,
exactly what I teach in my workshops. You and I have a lot in common.
You and I, we should teach together sometime. Imagine what we could
I would love to do that. No, I really do. I teach these EIFL statements, how to validate, how to do boundaries, how to detach, how to negotiate for what you want, how to take time out. A lot of anger management stuff that I learned in my marriage.
In our marriage. We learned it in sex work. We learned it because we've really, really gone to the grassroots school. I mean, there are no schools for sexuality. Well, there are a handful, smaller than a handful. But those of us who are now teaching sex, we've really had to make a study of it on our own. And take notes, and, you know, we've done a huge amount of research that most of us have never received any credit for.
Oh, yeah, I know. But you have to, I mean, when you're trying to do it holistically, as you and I are, because a lot of people, you know, when they hear sex, they think mechanics and genitals.
Yes.
So I think it's awesome that you're good. You know, you could have an orgasm even if you didn't have genitals. And they're like,
right.
No way.
Right. What's the number one question in your workshops? What's the number one issue, question? What do you see the most of in the people you're working with right now?
You know, one that comes up a lot is how can I get my wife to do blah, blah, blah.
Ooh, yeah.
How can I get my wife to do this thing I saw in the porno, or how can I get my wife to do that? And, you know, I like to take that back to, what's your relationship like with your wife? You know, which, it's interesting because I think some men are just hoping I'm going to give them some manipulative techniques to get what they want. And, you know, I never make it that easy for people, so I back them up and go, well, you know, are you cheating on your wife? You know, what's up with your wife? I mean, you guys talk? Are you guys angry at each other? You know, what's up? And it's like, oh, well, God, I want to talk about that. And I go, well, you know, it's one thing to go out and have a one-night stand with a stranger, but the person that's lived with you kind of knows what your bullshit is. If you're going to try to fool them, you know, that's just really
that
not
because
funny.
That's exactly what we mean when we say we need a sexual revolution. We need a complete reinvention and re-expectation of what sexual manners are, what healthy sexual boundaries are. I'm outlining a new book, and one of the things that I'm the most passionate about right now is helping people to find out, because I think this is really hard, it was for me, what exactly are my needs? Some people are good at naming their needs. Most people I know aren't. It's like, because we're always thinking about everyone else's needs and how we fit into them.
Well, yeah, and especially, I think, female-identified people are more likely to feel like sex is kind of something that they want to show up and look pretty for.
So what are our needs, and then what are our values, meaning priorities, what's important to us? You know, we may think or we should want wild, passionate, some form of sex that we've seen in a movie, and that's the way it should look, and we don't stop to ask ourselves, do we really have time to create that kind of life for ourselves? Is that really a priority, or is it just something that we think we should want? What do we really want? So many people beat themselves up not because they actually want more sex, but because they think they should be wanting more sex.
Yeah.
And some people really do want more sex, but other people don't. They just want to be comfortable knowing that the amount they're having is okay.
It reminds me of when I was still working as an escort, and the guys would come in and pay for my time, and they'd be all nervous and uptight and everything, and then I'd let them know that they really didn't have to have sex today. And you could just see their whole demeanor would change. They'd, like, breathe this sigh of relief, like, oh, okay.
Yes.
Then it's optional. I can relax now. I can just be a human being and, you know, let whatever happens naturally.
Yes.
Or not, you know. But
yes.
We don't have to have an agenda.
And that's the worst, I think, the over-sexualization of, the over-commercialization of sex because we aren't allowed to do it, so we can only have it as a commercial, you know. Sex is this really, really, really terrible thing, so save it for the person you love. I mean, huh? That's really the message we've been getting for the last God knows how many years.
Well, it's a real mind fuck when you think about it. It's a terrible thing, so I'm going to save it for the person I love. What in the hell are you telling me?
So we wonder why we're confused.
Yeah.
So revolution to me means getting in touch with what you want, not what the culture tells you should have, knowing what your preferences really are and honoring them, whether or not they're politically correct. You know, you may find something attractive that's not proper, or people who are queer people, deeply queer people, may not find a certain branch of queerdom attractive, but they're not allowed to say that because that would be uncool. That would be, you know, just disrespectful. And we all have turn-ons and turn-offs. It's just the way it is. And we don't have to be rude about them, but we get to honor them.
Absolutely.
So getting honest with ourselves about where we are is, I think, the first step to sexual freedom. And when we talk about a sexual revolution, that's really what I'm talking about. Sexual freedom. Freedom to be sexually who we are.
And you know what I would add to that is in the moment for today. Because too many people seem to have these rigid expectations about, well, I've always been straight, or I've always been gay, or I've always liked lots of sex, or, you know, whatever the script that they have for themselves. I try to teach people that sex goes through stages
Thank
and
you.
Phases, and you'll find yourself, I mean, you know, I'm bisexual, and there's times when I'm really hot for women, there's times when I'm really hot for men, there's times when I'm not hot for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
just being able to honor that instead of thinking that I have to be the same person year after year sexually, that I could be a different person. You know?
That, you know, that, speaking of mindfuck, in the culture we grew up in, not that we think that this is, not that we see evidence of lifelong monogamy happening, obviously, but nonetheless, the part, the message we get that we're always supposed to be the same sexually is the unspoken part of that forever monogamous with one person. Nothing changes.
Exactly.
Oh, we can go to a workshop and spice up our sex life, but nothing fundamental about our sexuality changes.
Right.
And of course things change. You know, that things change in every other aspect of our life. It's so amazing. Most people have less variety, have more variety in their clothes closet than they have in their sex life.
Amen to that, Barbara. That is so true. And I've seen people get locked into all kinds of things, like even people who are polyamorous and have a lot of different relationships will kind of get locked into that. Like, monogamy becomes a dirty word. And if they were to
mm-hmm.
actually fall in love, oh, no, somehow or another, that's not allowed.
And the way we do one polyamorous relationship is the way we do them all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the rules are we have to all be friends or whatever the rule is, whatever the cultural norm
or
is.
Or the way I do poly is better than the way you do poly, or what you're doing is not poly.
Right. 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 And that's what I mean and what Kate means when we say that we have got to stop fighting each other. In Urban Tantra, one of my goals was to welcome alternative genders and lifestyles into the light, to be included. To my next goal is to get the same freaks and outlaws, and I'm honored to be called a freak and an outlaw, so I mean it only in the best terms, to get the freaks and outlaws respected for the knowledge they have. We've certainly respected, and will continue to do so, the wisdom of the great majority, whatever that is. I also think that's a misnomer, but it's time to start looking into these other practices and ways of living and loving and sexing and going, let's pull the wisdom out. We're not saying it's all good. We're not saying it's all wise any more than the rules around monogamy are, but let's all pull them together. Let's see where the wisdom is. I mean, there are wonderful spiritual celibates who have a lot to teach us about how to use sexual energy when we're not being sexual, and to honor the people who want to be celibate. And the people have no idea how much celibacy there is in the world because everyone's too embarrassed to talk about it.
I actually teach celibacy in my workshops.
How? What do you do?
Well, I tell people that when they ask me, well, how can I have a better sex life? And I go, well, have you tried celibacy? I'm like, what? And they go, no, really, seriously. I go, sometimes just stepping back from sex altogether and creating this space that is just for you, and then developing, you know, a sexual relationship with yourself, or maybe not, depending on how you're feeling, but to be able to sit quietly with that so that you're out of the whole realm of expectations and of your own script of what you think you should or shouldn't be doing.
Exactly.
Because, I always say, you really don't have a yes unless you know how to say no.
Yes.
So... Yeah, I always think that's kind of, I know people come to the workshops, it's like, oh, we're going to see the former hooker, and the first thing she starts talking to us about is abstinence.
It's celibacy. That's nice. I like that. I like that. Well, I did some research on this, for a college lecture I did on the history of sex negativity. Well, I mean, I know, it could be an encyclopedia of all set, but I just pulled out things like, and we all think that the 60s were so rollicking. And then if we look at it, we go, well, not really. Nothing much one of my little factoids was in 1965, Jim Morrison of the Doors was arrested in Miami for miming masturbation. You know, it's like, it wasn't all that free. By the 70s, okay, that's when the sexual revolution was supposedly in full swing. But when I was looking at my little factoids, that's when, you know, Anita Bryant, the former Miss America, led the national crusade against homosexuality in Florida.
True.
It's when Larry Flint was shot.
Yeah.
It was when, you know, Harvey Milk was shot. That was the same year, by the way. And it was when, you know, Gerard Damiano's, the cast of all his films, Deep Throat, Devil and Miss Jones, those, were being chased around the country on these trumped-up interstate pornography distribution things. So we the myth that we
that
had this
Reagan,
lovely
huh?
then, when I got to the 80s, because the title of this was called Sex Negative Trivia,
yeah.
I just said the 80s, the whole decade was sex negative trivia, but the result wasn't very trivial. You know,
yeah,
that was the
no.
Moral Majority and the Mies Commission. That was just horrendous.
Yeah, and the Mies Commission decided that, we can't prove porn is creating any kind of problems in society, but we've decided that it is anyway.
Yeah, and my favorite one on the Mies Commission was Susie Bright, who was, of course, the editor of On Our Backs. She proudly announced that she'd masturbated to the Mies Report.
Yes.
But, you know, we have this myth that also our young people are growing up under, that they missed this grand and glorious, it was all perfect sexual revolution that was pre-AIDS. And I've facilitated workshops where, I've had people who are maybe now 30, kind of just burst into tears when they say, you know, I've never had unprotected sex. And you go, oh my God, right. And the only thing I can do is just say, congratulations. If everyone could say that, you know, I'm sorry that you haven't had a relationship where, you know, but to have achieved that, to be as sexual as you are, and to have always kept yourself physically safe, you deserve an award. And I'm so terribly sorry.
So
a sexual revolution really has to take into account all our wounds and our intimacy wounds about where we have been as a culture. We need to step back and go, let's look at where each one of us has come from. Everybody has, well, I love the title of your show, The Shame-Free Zone. Everybody has shame and guilt because we have all been caught in the crossfire in the wars on sex. We all have.
Oh, yeah. That's why I came up with the title, because, and I developed workshops around it, because after being in the media eye as an out and proud whore for all those years, I found pockets of shame in my own marriage.
Sure.
And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. I didn't think I had any shame. Especially not sexual, for God's sake. And I thought, wow, you know, and I could feel the oppressiveness of it and the pervasiveness of it. And I thought, you know, I can only imagine what it must be like for other people. It must just be crushing.
Yeah, that's a good word. That's a good word, crushing. So I think permission, I guess what we both try to give people now in the interest of moving them all on along in their sexual evolution and therefore revolution, is healthy doses of empathy, permission, and tools.
You know what I think of, Barbara? I think about, you know, just like when you go to play with BDSM, bondage, dominance, submission, and sadomasochism. Sorry, I'm not saying it for your benefit. I'm saying it for the listeners.
I know.
That we always create a safe place, which means that we need to know where things begin, where they end, and how we can get out of them, you know,
that's
by using
right.
our safe words. And then, of course, we have to have an educational background so that we know what's safe and what's dangerous and,
right.
and what lines we can cross and what lines we can't cross. So there's boundaries and there's information. And those are hugely important to create a safe container for you to play in. And I think that that's a really important concept for any kind of sex.
Exactly.
Any kind of sex.
And that's what I mean when I say that we have so much to teach each other.
Yes, I want the poly people to teach communication problem solving 101 to the monogamous people. I want the gay and lesbian couples to teach long-term relationships to the married heterosexual people.
Yep.
Because I meet a lot more gay and lesbian couples that have been together for a long time and are still happy and still have vibrant sex lives than I do straight people.
I agree. and the BDSM community for negotiation, safety, boundaries.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And the importance
of communicate right in the throes of passion.
Yep. And yes. So that's my vision of a sexual revolution is to get everybody with sexual wisdom to be able to be heard, not loved, dated, or married, just heard by the people who need the information without us judging each other for how different we are. And
well,
that's
really
something that I think this administration, given the racial issue and experience, would be good at.
I think you're right. I think you are absolutely right. This is going to be a time for building bridges, and I love your vision. I love your vision, and I'm so inspired by the idea that you are teaching orgasms without genitals in college classrooms.
I think the thing I am proudest of at the moment, the most awestruck by and the most grateful for. And, of course, I'm mostly being brought in by student organizations, and I just bless the administrators who sign the check when the kids bring in the contract and say, this is the speaker we want. I just bless those university people for staying out of the kids' way.
Absolutely. You know, we're almost out of time here, and I'm sure you've got some websites, emails, phone numbers, books.
Real quickly.
Like to turn our listeners on to you. Go for it.
Right, real quickly. I have a new radio show now, actually, on every other week on HayHouseRadio.com. It's called Sex with Barbara Corrales. Just go to HayHouseRadio.com, type in my name, look for my show, and listen in. My website is UrbanTantra.org, as in orgasm, but you can also find me at BarbaraCorrales.com. I will be teaching at Dark Odyssey Valentine's weekend in February in Washington, D.C., and I've got some spring workshops coming up, and all of that you can find on my website. And the spring is starting to fill up, so check back often. And, of course, you can buy my book, but you can see that on my website, too. Urban Tantra, Sacred Sex for the 21st Century.
So are you going to start a center for all of the sexually enlightened people to meet and start cross-pollinating?
You know, you're the second person in as many days who has asked me to start a center, so maybe there's a message in it, and maybe I should listen to you.
I
hadn't thought of it yet.
Maybe we can start having a conference and travel around the United States.
Well, Dark Odyssey is my favorite at the moment, and I'm going to give them another plug again. Go to darkodyssey.com, and that is a conference that certainly lives the ideals that we have been talking about on this program tonight.
Awesome. I've Twittered that to folks, too.
Thank you.
darkodyssey.com, a beautiful website. I'm going to explore it further. Barbara, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much. This was such a joy.
And thank you for giving us such an inspirational message for the new year.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.